And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in the second hour is an examination of consumption in America. All of my guests have interesting subjects on different sides of the consumption issue. My second guest examined the credo the second half of the 20th century and the first part of the 21st century, faster, cheaper, better. She understands the nine levers transforming how work gets done. We discussed thinking outside of the cost as manufacturers reevaluate further increases in productivity. My next guest thinks we have too much stuff, possibly brought on by my second guest's efforts to make things faster, better, cheaper. We'll examine the pattern of overconsumption in the United States and project the impact on the future from her book, The Story of Stuff. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Annie Leonard is the director of the Story of Stuff Project and author of the book, The Story of Stuff. I like that. She even recycles the name. How efficient is that? In December 2007, Annie released The Story of Stuff, a hit 20-minute web film on the hidden costs of our consumer-driven culture. The Story of Stuff has generated, get this, over 10 million views since its launch, making it one of the most successful environmentally themed viral films of all time. In 2008, Annie was named one of Time Magazine's Heroes of the Environment. Annie has spent nearly two decades investigating and organizing an environmental health and justice issues. Prior to directing the Story of Stuff project, Annie worked for Funders Work Group for Sustainable Production and Consumption and the Global Alliance for Interactive Alternatives, Healthcare Without Harm, Essential Action, and, of course, Greenpeace International. And it completed her undergraduate studies at Barnard College, Columbia University, and her graduate work in city and regional planning at no less than Cornell University. Welcome to the show, Annie. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. You are truly a thought leader in this area and one of the most well-respected people in the area. And before we get into your book, which I'm fascinated with, I'm even more fascinated with the web film, The Story of Stuff. I mean, the movie's epic. 10 million viewers. There are many theatrical movies that would die for that kind of, you know, viewership. And on the internet, I mean, that's practically unheard of. So why did you decide to do a web film, and how did you decide to make it 20 minutes in our attention-deprived society that we have?
Well, I spent 20 years prior to making the film traveling around the world looking at the factories where our stuff is made and the dumps where our stuff was dumped. When I came back to the United States, I really wanted to turn the volume up on the conversation about this. I wanted people to think a bit more about where all this stuff comes from in our life and where it goes and what the costs are along the way. And so I thought the best way to reach a lot of people was to make a little film. In my wildest dreams, I never thought it would be such a big hit.
I bet.
You know, in my funding proposals to raise money for it, I said, if 50,000 people see this film, that will be a smashing success. We will have shifted the discourse in this country. And to my utter amazement, when we made it and we put it online for free in December 2007, and it and our subsequent films are all available to watch free online at storyofstuff.org, we put it up online, and to my amazement, we got 50,000 views in one day.
Wow.
And now it's actually at 13 million. And what's really fascinating is that you can go to Google Analytics and look at a map of the world, and it's kind of creepy, but it's really interesting. You can see a dot everywhere someone has watched it, 223 countries and territories, according to Google Analytics. It's been translated into 30 different languages. It's inspired curriculums for schools and for churches. It's been on the front page of the New York Times, the front page of the LA Times. It's an amazing hit. And I just think that goes to show that people in our country are hungry for this conversation.
Well, that's absolutely true, and it sounds like people around the world. Two questions for you. First is a quick question. As you look at your Google Analytics and you look at the map, is this movie being viewed in China, which is one of the most egregious offenders right now in terms of environmental policies?
It's interesting because China blocks YouTube, so people can't watch it there. So some Chinese activists took it, translated it with Chinese subtitles, and then they have it on an alternative, a different thing than YouTube, so that people in China can see it, and we actually have a massive viewership there.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. But we're talking to Annie Leonard, and Annie, you're begging the whole question is, what makes your film so popular? I mean, you've got over 13 million views at this point for The Story of Stuff. What is it that's resonating with people right now?
Well, I think a couple things. One is, it's fun. You know, environmentalists, in general, we tend to be a grim and determined bunch. We tend to bombard people with facts and depression and guilt and scolding, and we tend to not have that much fun. And so I wanted to talk about these issues in a way that is engaging and fun and entertaining. So that's one thing I think, is that it's fun to watch this film. It's a funny cartoon. You'll actually laugh as you hear about systems of production and consumption, even though that's hard to imagine. The second thing, though, is I think it's relevant. I think the film really talked to people where they are. And I got literally thousands and thousands of emails from people who said, I knew that. I just didn't know how to say it. Or, you know, exactly, I'd been thinking about this for 20 years, but hadn't said it so quickly. You know, I think it really, there was a lot of relevance about the obsession with consumption that people resonated with. You know, we're totally crushed with our consumer credit card debt. Our houses are overflowing with stuff. Our garages are full of stuff. We're overworked. We're exhausted. It's just so clear that we have allowed stuff to take over too much of our lives, and people seem ready for a change.
All right. We're talking to Annie Leonard, who is the director of the movie, The Story of Stuff, and author of the book of the same title. And so, Annie, I guess my next question is, with the popularity of the web film, why did you write a book?
Because I got flooded with emails asking for more information, and I was so excited because, you know, I've been thinking about this for 20 years. So at first, when I started getting these emails, I literally tried to stay up all night, every night, answering them all. And I realized I just couldn't. I figured it was a short flash in the pan interest, but it's still going on. I've received over 250,000 emails asking for more information, sharing their stories. So I realized I cannot answer all these emails. So I decided, let's just answer them all in one place. So I wrote a book. And so the book has a lot more detail on all the things I whizzed through in the 20-minute cartoon. The book also has a lot of personal stories. I mean, I really did spend 20 years sneaking into factories and dumps in China and Pakistan and Haiti and South Africa and places like that. So I have a lot of firsthand accounts of what I saw. And probably most importantly, the book has a lot of signs of hope and ways to get involved. Because I, in spite of the, you know, terrible things that I saw traveling the world, looking at factories and dumps, I remain full of hope that we can turn things around.
Well, and that is great. And I love the epilogue of your book. Really does talk about things people can do. But, Annie, I'm going to shift gears if I can here for just a minute. I want to make one thing clear to the listeners. You're not against consumption. You recognize that people need stuff. But I need you to, for my audience, to draw the distinction between consumerism and consumption.
I'm so glad you made that distinction. It's really important. I am not talking about us all going back and living in caves and, you know, eating cardboard-tasting veggie burgers and that kind of stuff. I'm talking about having very full lives with the things that we need, but with consumption having a more healthy balance in our lives. The kind of overconsumption that I'm concerned about is the consumption that is trashing the planet. We are simply using more resources than the planet can produce each year. It's like that's just a physical reality. We have got to learn to live within one planet. Right now, we're using 1.5 planets full of resources each year. So I'm concerned about overconsumption in terms of taxing the planet. I'm concerned about the prevalence of toxic chemicals in all the things that we consume. So I want to use fewer things. I want to use it more efficiently. I want our stuff to be cleaner, healthier, and safer. And I'm also concerned about the third part of overconsumption, which is how we tend to equate our personal self-worth or our sense of value with what we own. And that just spurs us to always be buying more and more newer, fancier, expensive stuff. And I'd love to see us value ourselves and each other based on the quality of our character rather than the stuff that we own.
Well, very altruistic, and we'll come to this in a little bit, but advertisers would have us believe that we are our cars and we are our house and all of that as well. Before we get to that, however, we do want to set up the book, which is titled The Story of Stuff, The Impact of Overconsumption on the Planet, Our Communities, and Our Health, and what we can do to make it better. And in your book, you examine the five phases or life cycles of consumption, and I'm just going to quickly list them for everybody, and then I'm going to ask you to sort of give us examples from real-world products that we use. The first is extraction, getting the stuff out of the earth. Production, distribution, consumption, and disposal. Those are the five cycles. So now let's put it into concrete terms. Let me give you an example of a laptop computer. Take us through the extraction, production, distribution, consumption, and disposal of a laptop.
Wow, you picked a doozy as an example.
I always do.
Because laptops and all electronics are just outrageous in all of these categories. They're among the most unsustainable products we have. So extraction, let's look at the minerals. I mean, all kinds of electronics use vast amounts of minerals, and there's many places where the mining is destroying the environment, contaminating local water supplies, or even fueling conflict. You may have heard about the civil war in the Congo, which is largely fueled by coltan, which is a metal that we need for these cheap and disposable electronics. And so coltan mining, it's called a conflict mineral because the coltan mining is fuels such incredible human rights atrocities. So there's an enormous amount of mining waste to create these electronics. You know, and some of our electronics now look so tiny and sleek and smooth that really sort of hides the fact that it leaves behind a mountain of mining waste. So then the materials after they're mined, they go to production. And that's where they're mixed, the natural resources are mixed with synthetic chemicals to produce the actual product. And electronics are loaded with toxic chemicals. So you have not only things like lead, cadmium, mercury, but you have PVC plastics, flame retardants, a huge number of chemicals, thousands, that are linked to cancer, neurological problems, reproductive problems. So that's a problem for the workers in these factories, huge problem for them. And there's lots of links to show elevated rates of cancer in electronics factories workers. Huge problem for the workers, huge problems for the communities that live near the factories, and then even some problems for us because some of those chemicals do leach off as we use them. Then that brings us to distribution, where these things are shipped all over the world, and typical laptop could have parts from many, many countries literally all over the world. So there's a huge carbon footprint there as we're shipping this stuff literally around the entire planet. Then we have consumption, which is the brief period of time during which we like and own this thing. And that period of time is shrinking every year. You know, cell phones, for example, the average life of a cell phone now is less than 12 months, and then we are chucking it and replacing it. After consumption comes disposal, and that's where we throw it away. And e-waste, we call it, you know, the discarded electronics, cell phones, laptops, that is the fastest growing part of our municipal waste stream and the most hazardous because of all the hazardous chemicals in the laptop. And so often this stuff gets dumped in a landfill, even worse, burned in an incinerator, so it goes up the smokestack, or even worse than that, shipped to a third world country where workers with no protection smash them open to get out the tiny bits of lead and copper, and I mean gold and copper and valuable materials, and then just dump the rest over there. So all along the way, it's damaging the environment, it's damaging health, and all along the way, it could be so much better. I mean, it's just simply not necessary to trash the planet or people to have a good computer.
Oh, and if that doesn't scare you, nothing will. We're talking to Annie Leonard, everybody, who is the author of the book, The Story of Stuff, The Impact on Overconsumption on Our Planet, Our Communities, and Our Health, and How We Can Make It Better. And that brings us to the How We Can Make It Better part, Annie. So what are some simple actions that we can take both at work and at home that can help the planet out and help us in this overconsumptive society?
There's lots of things we can do at an individual level. I mean, one is before we buy stuff, just stop and think, do I really need this? Is there another way I could get it besides buying it? Does a neighbor have one I could borrow? Could I buy one used? Could we set up a system for sharing? In my city, the public library system has a tool lending library. So anyone with a library card, which is free to get, can go to this tool lending library and get a power drill, a glue gun, a jackhammer, a ladder, all these things that we each only use, you know, a few times a year. Yet, too often in this country, every garage has all of these things. There's just no reason for us all to have them. So one thing is consume less. Another thing is consume more wisely. When you do buy stuff, choose the least toxic, most sustainable one available. But at the same time that that's important, we're never going to shop our way out of this problem. So the most important thing to do is join an organization that's working for lasting systemic change. And there's so many organizations involved. I like to say this problem is so big that you don't even have to do something boring. There's so many fun ways to get involved. So think about what turns you on. Is it community gardening and local food, or is it bike lanes and public transportation, or is it better product design? You know, all across the board, there's so many vibrant organizations. Get in touch with one, get involved. And then we can actually build the political power to make a difference and have much more fun doing it.
Oh, wow. Incredible stuff. Annie, I want to ask you, because I ask this of many authors, what did you get out of writing the book?
Two things. I got an easy response when people asked me many more questions. I can say it's in the book. So it freed me up from writing 250,000 emails. But it also really forced me to think through this information and track down the most recent statistics. There's so much environmental data flying around, and I had to really search and fine-tune my knowledge to make sure that everything I said was absolutely right. So I have even a clearer vision and knowledge base now than before I started.
Oh, that is great. And we've only got 30 seconds left. It's unfair to ask this question in 30 seconds, but you're a fast talker. Talk to me about internalizing the external costs of doing business. And, of course, the biggest example that's on everybody's mind is cap and trade when it comes to carbon emissions. Is that going to be a solution for us in the near term?
I can answer that quickly because we have a film, The Story of Cap and Trade. It's all, you can Google The Story of Cap and Trade, or you can go to our website, storyofstuff.org, where we have a bunch of different little films, and one specifically looks at cap and trade and why it is a false solution that will never get us to the real climate solutions we need.
Annie, you are a great guest. We've been talking to Annie Leonard, everybody, the director of the movie, The Story of Stuff, and also the author of the book of the same name, The Story of Stuff, The Impact of Overconsumption on the Planet, Our Communities, and Our Health, and How We Can Make It Better. Annie, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
I look forward to it.
Thanks, Annie. Take care.